Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah?
You remember that ball game we went to a couple years ago?
Sure.
And how you didn't have enough cash for two hot dogs, so you walked with me on your shoulders until we found an ATM? And then when we got back to our seats, we never saw the hot dog guy again.
Well, I don't remember all that.
Yeah, that was an awesome game.
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. And today we're talking about the state of young black males. We have some very special guests with us this morning, Dr. Shane Perot. He's a clinical psychologist and coach with more than 16 years of experience. He works in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. He also has his own practice, and at the same time, he's working with the ADHD Performance Clinic in Silver Springs, Maryland. Dr. Perot has done workshops on topics including effective communication, conflict resolution, and dating your spouse. We also have this morning Jordan Culpepper. He was highlighted in Black Enterprise as the Teenpreneur of the Year. He's only 13 years old. He's out of the Illinois area, and he has his own marketing business using buttons. Good morning to Dr. Perot. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jordan's website, just want to let people know, is www.buttonsbyjordan.com, so check him out when you get a chance after the show. If you are calling in and you have a question, you can press the number 1. And those who are listening on the computer, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 646-929-0368. And I want to thank the listeners for joining me this morning. I want to read a little bit from the Black Male Handbook by Kevin Powell. This is by Byron Hurt. He's a filmmaker. I don't know about you, but I think about my black maleness everywhere I go, walking down the street, in elevators, in stores, at the gym, in crowds, on trains, on airplanes, around other black men, and especially around large crowds of white people. Even as a 38-year-old man, I can't seem to shake the fact that people from all racial backgrounds prejudge me before they even get to know me. Why am I so hyper aware of my black maleness and the way other people perceive me? Because I know that so many people in this country have bought into the various stereotypical images of black men as big, dangerous, and scary. From Nat Turner to Jack Johnson, Marcus Garvey to Malcolm X, Jim Brown to Mike Tyson, O.J. Simpson to Bigger Thomas, Barry Bonds to Pac-Man Jones, we conjure up fears in the hearts of people who have not closely examined their prejudices of black males. Meanwhile, the media, from Hollywood movies to cable news, continue to play on white people's overwhelming fear of black men. Images of black males in the media have been distorted for so long in this country that many of us don't even recognize dangerous images when we see them. This is an ongoing issue, the state of young black males. There are some positives that are happening with young black men. Jordan Culpepper is an example of that. Dr. Perot is an example of that. Kevin Powell is an example of that. Ephraim Taylor, he's a multimillionaire under the age of 30. He's a young black male doing wonderful things. Yet there are still a lot of hardships that are happening to young black males from the time of inception, from the prenatal care issues, family issues dealing with single motherhood, dismissal in the educational system where there's no support, maybe being evaluated for disabilities or being evaluated for being gifted, peer pressure, rates of homicide, suicide, so many things. This morning, this is what we're talking about, so feel free to jump in. I want to start with the issue of parental support and the relationship between paternal involvement and child outcomes. There's an article by the Forum on Public Policy. They did a study examining the effects of paternal absence on young black males between the age of 9 and 12. And the results were that, on average, young males who did not reside with a paternal figure showed more depression and conduct problems than their counterparts who had male paternal figures. I want to get Dr. Perot's perspective on this issue. Do you believe that paternal support and paternal presence is important to the success of young black males? Do you think that young black males can be successful without it? What is your opinion, Dr. Perot?
My feelings are that it's definitely critical,
But we have to look at the reality of our situation and say, can we do without it? And I say definitely. We have a history of doing it in this country, as a matter of fact. I know myself, I grew up with a single mother, and she was very, very determined, having three black males, that we would all be successful. Now, we may have lived up in a rough environment outside the door, but when the door closed, she was very specific about what it was we were to do. She really valued education, and she placed a premium on that. And she made sure we did. You know, she made sure we were always involved in programs, which is something I encourage all the single mothers out there to go to the YMCAs, the boys clubs, go to the universities. They have programs like Young Black Scholars, Upward Bound, summer programs for those that are financially not as well off. And we were always involved in those type of things, and she made sure of that. Now, she may have had to work a lot because she didn't have the support she might have wanted, but we all turned out pretty successful. I have another brother that's a psychiatrist, another one that's a chef, and I just say that to say that if that is the situation where you don't have one, it doesn't mean all is lost.
Jordan, what do you feel about that? Are you together with both your parents?
I am.
And how do you feel that's helped you with your business and staying on track with that?
I think it's very good to have two perspectives. You have how would a situation be taken from a feminine side, and how a situation would be taken from a masculine side. And of course, I'm trained to think in the masculine terms, but it's also helpful when you can visualize something from the feminine terms, because it teaches you how to evaluate problems more efficiently and easier.
Mm-hmm. What are some unique things that you think your dad has brought into your life in terms of helping you or supporting you, or even in terms of discipline? What are some of the things that you think he's brought into your life?
Well, he's had me watch Eyes on the Prize and take notes and everything. He's had me watch the movie and tell me what the problem was, and tell me how I could fix the problem, and learn how people, African Americans in history, have worked to change black America.
Wow. And what about your mom? What influences do you think your mom gave you? Was it an issue of compassion or sensitivity? What things that your mom gave you or supported you in that were different than your father?
Well, she's had me go to church. She wants me to be close with God. She wants me to put God first in everything. So my dad's kind of the producer, make things happen for yourself and don't rely on people. And my mom is saying rely on God to help solve your problems also.
Mm. I want to read a little bit. Ronald Mincy, he's a sociologist, and he did an article with PBS and talking about the issue of marriage and the African-American community. And they asked him, what are some of the key social forces that have led to this reduction of marriage rates? And he states that there are three broad factors affecting marriage trends: the increase of independence of women, the deterioration in economic status of men. Now, there's an issue in terms of black men in family environments. Maybe the parents don't have a certain educational background. Maybe because of economics, people are struggling. Dr. Pearl, what do you feel? Have you seen young men coming from low socioeconomic backgrounds? Their parents don't have a certain level, like maybe they only have a high school education. Does that affect their behavior and their acting out?
I just want to make sure I'm clear on the question. So you're asking me, because the connection wasn't as well right there, if there's an economic component to
acting out. Yeah, the economic status and the educational level of parents, how does that affect young black males? What is your experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it puts them in riskier environments, which is the first thing, because they're not in environments where people tend to be as educated as well. They're not in environments where there are a lot of supervision. But I think even worse, they're not in environments where they're able to have parents that are really involved with the school systems. And that's what I see when it comes to even treatment of kids that are having problems is, it's very hard as a psychologist to even provide treatment because a lot of times they don't have the resources to afford them. Mm. So it's not just not having money, but kind of how does that take them out of the equation of getting a lot of the help that they need.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting that we talk about talking about school and education. The U.S. Census Bureau, June 2004, stated that actually high school graduation rates had reached an all-time high. So this is breaking the stereotype that, you know, people are African Americans and non-Hispanic whites are not graduating from high school. They're saying there was actually an all-time high. This was in 2004, and it said that the percentage of non-Hispanic whites and blacks who had high school diploma or higher marked new highs in 2004. 80% of blacks had a high school diploma. And as we know, the level of your education can affect the income that you have. Dr. Perot, let me, if there's a caller, I see some callers. If you have a question or you need to make a comment, please press the number one so that I know to pick up your call. Dr. Perot specializes in ADHD issues, and we hear a lot in the news and the media about young black males being in school and being dismissed, not being supported, not being told the routes and supports to go to college. I don't know if parents are aware, but it is mandatory for schools, if you request it, for your child to be evaluated for special education or for gifted programs. I don't think a lot of parents are aware of that. That is something that once you ask your school to do that, they have to do it and they have a certain time to do it. Dr. Perot, what is your experience with the educational supports in our society for young black males in school?
I think as it relates to educational supports, a lot of the key is what can the parents take advantage of? Also, what do the parents do at home to kind of support the school system from this take of, wow, are they help making sure that the assignments are getting in? Are they going to the teachers and making sure that their kids are getting what they need? And if the kids are doing poorly, what's really going on? Is it a behavioral problem that the kid's having in class?
Mm-hmm.
What does it take to help them be successful? Is it getting them in a different curriculum? I know you mentioned that I do ADHD, and I'm at ADHD Performance Counseling in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I find that with ADHD kids, while we tend to get diagnosed disproportionately, and there's a lot of debate on that as well, a lot of times when I see they're put in alternative curriculum,
mm-hmm.
they're able to do pretty well. And so if you have a kid that's been labeled as someone that's not doing well, as I'm sure some of the callers out there might, how do you find out what way your kid learns? A lot of kids fail, I think, in our educational system because it's not a good match for their learning style. I've seen
mm-hmm.
kids where I put them in music programs. I've seen kids where I put them in business programs and some even in math programs, and they all of a sudden start to do pretty well.
Yeah, I think people learn differently. There's visual, there's physical, there's all different ways. And I think this issue of No Child Left Behind and the testing and making sure that the school has the highest scores so that they can continue to get funding has lost sight of that aspect of how kids learn. Some kids can't learn by just rote. Some kids need the arts. Some kids need sports. Some, you know, kids need that they're more into science and mathematics. So I think that's a really big issue. Jordan, I want to ask you in terms of your school experience, have you had a positive experience going through elementary school? Now are you about to go into high school? What has been your experience? How do you feel you're perceived by teachers and peers in your school?
Well, the teachers at my school, they make sure you have a positive learning environment and they make sure the work is challenging so that you know how to work your brain.
Mm-hmm.
They have a positive attitude towards if you're learning a little slower than other students. They make sure they can take time after school or before school or on the weekends to help
mm-hmm.
you catch up and make sure you're on the same level as all the other kids.
And how have your parents helped you with your school? Did your parents read to you a lot when you were younger?
Yes.
Do you feel that helped you in school?
They do. I actually tutor with my other teacher. And they have me doing a math program so that I can get into this higher math class that I am in now.
Mm-hmm.
But they made sure, at first I was a little bit struggling, but when I got into the tutoring program, she made sure she explained every step to me so that she made sure I understood it before we went to the next chapter, and I
mm-hmm.
wasn't just getting it before she moved on.
Well, that's really good.
Yeah,
I mean, go ahead, Dr. Perot.
Yeah, I think Jordan represents the ideal circumstances where, you know, we tend to do pretty well when you match for socioeconomic status, and
mm-hmm.
he's a kid with two parents that are really involved in the system. So that's ideal, and that's great. Unfortunately, in the black community, you're talking about 53% of families being one parent. And so that isn't done as much. But that's the key, and that's what we're going to have to recognize to take advantage of the school systems. Like, I'll have parents bring me their kids, and they'll say, oh, my kid's doing bad. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the IEP meeting, and they'll tell me what the kid's like in class, and I'll see a different story. Mm-hmm. And so we'll try and figure out, what does it take? What supports does this kid really need to be successful? I had a young lady that came in, and she was doing horrible in school. And so we sat down, and you talked about different learning styles. She was very good musically. I said, well, how many songs do you know? She said 200. So she wrote one of the songs on the board. I went to YouTube, listened to it. She didn't miss a comma. Mm. So what we started doing was having her write her homework assignments and study for a test with music. But not only that, she wrote songs for all the things that she was doing, and the kid turned around to a B-plus student. So a lot of these kids have resources intellectually, and they have ways of processing things that will work for them. And what we have to do is figure out, hey, if your kid is struggling, what are they doing well?
Right.
And let's help them apply that to the educational system.
Well, let me check this caller here. Good morning, caller. Good morning. Okay, hello. Okay, I guess they got cut off. let's talk about the issue of the violence that kids are experiencing these days, especially African-American children experience high rates of violence in their schools. There was a study done that in terms of safety in neighborhoods and schools, I guess more than like 70% of kids felt unsafe, black non-Hispanic kids felt unsafe in their areas, and as compared to their white counterparts, 92% of whites always felt safe. This issue of violence in schools and peer pressure to be, machismo, that's the issue that young black males face, the issue of machismo and, you know, I'm the man, you know, I got the sickest sneakers, I don't know all the slang, you know, I'm a parent, but... what do you feel about that, Jordan? Have you experienced this peer pressure to be like a machismo and, you know, not have any feelings and just be real hard?
No, the kids at my school, pretty much, they don't pick on other students.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been any violence. Everyone treats each other the same. If you don't talk to a person, you don't act aggressive or you don't act mean to this person, you just don't talk to them. And that way you can... cut down the number of fights that are happening at school. So pretty much
right.
It's a very safe area for me.
Well, I think, again, as Dr. Perot said, I wanted to highlight that Jordan is one of the goals that we achieve is trying to, he has a lot of support in his life. He has a calming environment. I think our environment affects us greatly. If you're going home to, say, a domestic violence situation, if you're going home and on your block you can't sit out on your porch because there's gunfire, if, you know, you're going home and there's, you know, you don't have the support for helping you read, and if you have a problem finding tutoring. These are things that affect children overall, whether you're black or white or Hispanic, but unfortunately they're affecting young black males disproportionately. You know, I know in Kevin Powell's book, Jeff Johnson mentioned the myth that, you know, young black men aren't going to college. Yes, there are more black men going to college than there are in prison, but there are more black males in prison than other minorities and compared to white counterparts. So, Dr. Perot, what is your experience with violence in young black males' life? The issue of domestic violence is a serious issue that can affect black males. If they, my understanding is that a child, even if they're not the victim of the violence, by seeing that violence, they can grow up and then perpetuate domestic violence. What is your experience with that?
I think by witnessing, there are two issues. First, you're talking about the issue of violence and then the issue of domestic violence. So
mm-hmm.
let me kind of address those.
Yeah, there's
separately.
Two different ones. I think we have a caller. Let me just check if this is Kevin.
Yeah, this is Kevin. I really apologize.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Apologies to you and your guests. How are you?
That's okay. We just got on the issue of, two things. Domestic violence that young black males experience in the home, but then also violence that they're experiencing in their neighborhoods and communities. And Dr. Perot wanted to make a comment. Go ahead, Dr. Perot.
Okay, yeah, I was just joining the distinction between violence and domestic violence. You know, when you're talking about violence, yeah, growing in a violent background has a lot of effects. I know I recently had a kid that was beat down in a gang initiation. Real sweet kid doing nothing but going to class. And turns out he's probably the type of student that Jordan is. Well, very academic and just not fitting in. And I think we just have a tradition of that, and we have to figure out how do we make our school grounds a little safer in that regard, because this woman was drawn to the program because it was a magnet program, and she had to take him out of it. So it was just a very traumatic experience for the young man, and I think violence is a problem in our school systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Kevin's book, one of his participants, Kendrick Nathaniel, talks about always fighting, constantly fighting out and until finally he, I guess, went into the services. Kevin, what is your experience with the issue of violence in communities and young black males and how that affects their mental health, their educational advancement, and their relationships with other black men? What is your experience with that?
Well, I think, first of all, and again, thank you for having me here, and it's good to be with the doctor. I think we all are clear that the entire country is rooted in violence. It's not something that's just particular to black people or to black males. We're talking about a society where you see people habitually using violence to deal with situations of employment, disgruntlement, of relationships, problems, et cetera. And so I think, you know, certainly in our communities as people, we're disproportionately affected by it because record numbers of us are winding up in the criminal justice and prison system. I can't tell you how many funerals I've been to for young black males, young black Latino males. I can't tell you how many I work with in our communities here in New York, around the country, who have been the victims of domestic violence. And I think for me, at this stage in the game, as a 40-something man who grew up in this kind of world, I think one of the critical things we've really got to do as leaders, and I'm talking about folks like the doctor, yourself, myself, folks who are working with people regularly, is really ask a simple question. How are we defining manhood, and how has it been constructive to the forward motion of our communities, and how has it been destructive? And I would also argue that we shouldn't just place the onus on young black males, because Don Cornelius, the founder of Soul Train, was arrested for domestic violence a few months ago. We know that James Brown had many arrests for domestic violence well into his 70s. And so this is something that literally is passed from generation to generation with many of us in our communities, and we're not having honest conversations about it. And I think the real crux of it is, are we willing to look at some of the things that, say, Dr. King and James Baldwin talked about, which is, are we willing to adapt lifestyles that are consistently about nonviolence and peace and a love and respect for each other as men and a love and respect for women as our equals?
Mm-hmm. Well, in your book, one of your co-authors said, men murder 4 women per day in the United States. Battering is the leading cause of injury to young women in America. And one of the things he also talked about at a workshop he went to, men, what things do you do on a daily basis to protect yourself from being raped or sexually assaulted? I want to repeat that. Men, what things do you do on a daily basis to protect yourself from being raped or sexually assaulted? And he really became enlightened when the women in the group listed all the things that they have to do to protect themselves. Don't walk alone at night.
Right.
Look underneath my car. Get my keys out before I get to my car. Don't drive by myself alone. Don't walk by my dog by myself alone. Don't put my drinks down at clubs. Leave a male voice on my home voicemail. I mean, this is it's a very serious issue, and I brought Dr. Perot and Kevin Powell on this morning. Kevin Powell, especially, I was touched by his experience with this issue. He wrote a great article in the Huffington Post about ending violence against women. He was also interviewed on Oprah about ending the violence. What is the top 3 things that black males can do to help end violence against women? Kevin, I want to broach that to you.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I mean, one, I think we've got to take ownership for whatever mistake that we've made if we actually were a batterer ourselves, if we were an abuser ourselves, and I definitely agree that we have to be honest about it. Number 2, you have to get help. I'm so happy you have the doctor on the show, because one of the things that I talk about all around the country is that black folks have got to begin to embrace counseling and therapy. I think it's critical. It certainly changed my life over the last 20 years, having, you know, gone to 3 or 4 different counselors at different points to really deal with and unpack a lot of the traumas. You know, we need to be clear of all the wounds that many of us have come up with, again, generational things that are passed along that we could be normalizing our communities that become very destructive behavior. And then I think three, you know, we as males have got to begin to have the courage to listen to the voices of women and girls. One of the biggest things that has come at me since I was on the Oprah show and since I wrote a piece in Essence Mag in Ebony, pardon me, called Men Can Stop Domestic Violence, a lot of men have been mad defensive. They're like, you know, Kev, what about the women who batter men? What about the women who do this to men? What about the women who have the sharp tongues, et cetera? It's this kind of defensive pose. And what we're ignoring is if you go to a website called endabuse.org, 84 to 86% of all the domestic violence cases in this country are the women as victims. I'm not saying that there aren't men who have been assaulted by women. One of my best friends, her father just died. He had been stabbed in his sleep by her mother. And so certainly her experience was of her mother being violent towards the father. And what we're getting at, what I say to men, is like, you know, why would you want to be in any kind of relationship that is toxic, whether you're doing it to her or she's doing it to you, be it verbal or physical abuse? And then beyond that, I just think that we've really got to ask ourselves, you know, are we really trying to take our communities forward in terms of sane, healthy relationships? I keep coming back to that piece around mental health, but I think it's critical, and I think the doctor would agree.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, Dr. Pearl, let me just take this caller for a second. Let me take a call. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Keys, and good morning, Mr. Powell. This is Adam Hall from AJ's Hawaiian Ices.
Oh, hi. Yes, this is another guest that I brought on this morning. Adam and Jonathan Holland, they were nominated for the Black Teen Panor Award and Black Enterprise Magazine. Good morning. Dr. Pearl, you wanted to comment about what Kevin was just saying?
I really want to follow up on what Kevin Powell was saying, but from an aspect of someone who provides treatment to domestic violence victims. And a lot of the challenge also is how do they get out? You know, currently our country is going through a process economically. We're in a downturn. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that normally give money to shelters and various things aren't giving it, coupled with the fact that the shelters are now full and people are staying longer. So you have a lot of women out there in domestic situations where they're being abused, and they are domestically violent. And in addition to that, you have a situation out there where violent people are becoming more violent. You're seeing an increase in felony domestic violence charges.
Is this because of their desperation of the economic situation? I mean, in terms of black males, I mean, unemployment situation might have been bad at one point, but now it's worse. For minorities and black males, do you think that's adding that fuel to escalate?
That's a big part of it. And the second part of it is now they're home longer because they're unemployed. And they're more frustrated, as you said, and they're more angry. So you're seeing a rise. Now, what I see from a lot of women is they reach out and people just don't have the resources anymore. I mean, people are struggling around them as well. So it's something we really have to look at as a nation. And this isn't black people. This is just throughout our culture that these programs are being cut out and women are being forced to stay in situations that are becoming increasingly more violent.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you know, February was Teen Dating Violence Month, and I want to bring in the issue of relationships that young black males develop with females when they're, you know, in the teenagers. You know, how can we teach young black men to have healthy relationships with young women when they're in high school? How can we talk to young black men about sexual issues, the rate of HIV infection, pregnancy? Kevin, what are some of your things that you do? I know you focus a lot on providing sacred spaces for black males to talk about issues. What do you think we can do to help young black men in high school form positive relationships with women, and also the issue of sexual health and preventing pregnancy?
Well, I think we got to do what did not happen for me, which is be honest with young people. Young people are very, very brilliant, and I think a lot of times adults come in, you know, we'll talk at the students. I think one of the worst things that we can do is go to a high school and talk for an hour and then say, okay, we're going to have 10 minutes for a Q&A. I think right from the jump, you've got to make those kind of conversations very interactive. And remember that young people today are very different than, say, when I was a teenager in the 1980s, where we had about 8 or 9 TV channels. You're talking about 400 channels that are competing for their attention. So if you're not engaging them, and honestly, and they're talking about it amongst themselves just the way I did as a teenager. And the difference is, and I'm very fortunate, I never got anyone pregnant, but I certainly was out there like a lot of us were because I was completely ignorant about sexual health and responsibility, about my body, and I certainly had no one telling me this is how you should approach dating of a young woman. And so I think we've got to be honest, and we do that with our monthly black male workshops. It is a space that we created, and we certainly go into the schools. We go to foster care programs. We go into the prisons, wherever young men are, And you find that there's a lot of hardened attitudes about masculinity by the time boys are really, you know, 12, 13 years old. You know, girls are sexual objects. You know, it's okay. You know, like when Rihanna, the situation with Rihanna and Chris happened, one of the things we got a lot was, well, what did Rihanna do to Chris? And so they already got these sexist notions of what manhood is about. The woman must have done something for him to act that way. And our challenge and what we say to the young males, there is absolutely no reason for you to engage in that kind of behavior, because oftentimes our definition of manhood is very, very limited. It's what we see on TV. It's what we hear on the radio. And sadly, some of it is coming from our fathers and our uncles and our older brothers right in our homes.
Right. I have a caller here. Let me take this caller. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Keys. How you doing?
I'm good. Do you have a question for our guest about young black males or the topic we're talking about, sexual health?
Oh, well, right now I was just calling in to let you know that you're doing a very good job, and you should keep up a very, you know, good work.
Oh, thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, but I will be...
Oh, hello? Oh, I think we got a little cut off. I want to talk with Jordan and Anthony and Jonathan. Are you there?
We're here. I'm here.
Hi, good morning. I want to focus, Anthony and Jonathan, just talk a little bit about your business that you have. These are two young brothers doing very positive things. Anthony, Jonathan, go ahead. Talk about, a little bit about your business. Can you hear me?
Yes. Well, hello. First of all, I'm Adam Holland. I'm the CEO of AJ's Hawaiian ICs. And my business is we service a high quality frozen dessert, and we service various corporate events like festivals, carnivals, and things of that nature. And
how old are you, Adam?
I'm 13, and my brother is 12.
Wow.
He's 13 and 12. Two young black brothers doing wonderful things. We also have Jordan Culpepper. I mentioned him earlier. He has a Buttons by Jordan. He was the winner of the Black Enterprise Magazine Teenpreneur Award. He's only 13 years old. Adam and Jonathan, they have a website. It's www.ajsiceez.com. I'll put it on my website. I know that's a little long, but I just wanted to highlight these are some young black males, very young, 13 years old, doing positive things. Adam and Jonathan, what do you think helped you most become successful?
Well, what most keeps me on track and focused is the fact that I don't want to live a remedial lifestyle. I strive to do something great in life, because when I die, I don't just want it to be like I was never there and then no one ever remembers my name. In the history books, as a man that changed the world. So I want to start young, and I want to grow older to establish myself in the business world. And I want children to learn about me, you know, even now when I'm here and later when I'm gone. So I just wanted to start something, you know, great for this race and be an inspiration to kids my age, older, and some younger than me.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I think that's the goal, is that we all want to be exceptional. I don't want to be just ordinary. I want to be exceptional. One of the things I know Kevin Powell talks about in his book is be the change you want to see. You know, be proactive. We're talking about issues and problems that are never going to go away, I don't believe. But what can we do every day? What are you doing to help resolve these issues of domestic violence, of educational supports, of, you know, HIV, you know, rates increasing, of teen dating violence, of mental health issues? What are you doing? Are you giving your time? Can you give your money? Can you give your resources? And maybe it's only 1 hour a week. But I want to say to the listeners and the people around the nation who are listening to the show, always ask yourself, okay, this morning I'm complaining about this problem. What did I do to change this problem?
May I say something really quickly?
Go ahead.
Because something the doctor said just resonated with me, and he's absolutely right. And I'm not a health professional. I'm very clear about that. But as a community organizer, you can imagine how many folks come to us and say, I need help. I'm talking about women for a second who are survivors of domestic violence. And, you know, the challenge is, one, trying to find places that they can go, safe spaces, battered women's shelters, counseling that they can go that's free or low cost. But there's a lot of resources in our communities that are not being tapped into. I'm a Christian. I go to church here in Brooklyn, New York, and one of the challenges I put out there to folks who call themselves Christians, who go to churches, particularly given that many of our churches are 65, 70, 80, 90% women oftentimes, does your church have a ministry for women who are survivors of any form of violence? You know, are we dealing with those kind of concrete issues? Because if we're going to call ourselves Christians or Muslims or Jewish or whatever we have, are we providing safe spaces? You know, are your elected officials actually being connected to the community in a certain way that they're helping and assisting a lot of these women? I mean, I honestly say to folks a lot of times here in Brooklyn, which has the largest black community in America very quietly, over a million black folks here, you know, we oftentimes find ourselves doing the jobs of elected officials and the jobs of elected officials and ministers should be doing. You know, another issue is there are programs out there. A lot of times our folks don't simply know where to go. Does the community that you live in even have any kind of directory, offline or online? I'm not talking about the yellow pages, but a simple listing of some services that folks can get, because a lot of it oftentimes is the lack of information. And so I just want us to think about these things, because I refuse to believe that we can't help some of the folks that are coming, even if we have to do some non-traditional approaches to this.
Definitely. Dr. Pearl, do you have any comment about what we can do on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, to help combat some of these issues?
Yeah, I like what Kevin was saying about the church, because I think that is obviously the cornerstone of our community. Earmark money when you're tithing. Earmark it for domestic violence shelters, because I think, as this interview in particular is pointing out, there really have been some changes in the funding for those programs, and you have a lot of women that are just simply stuck in situations that they can't get out of. So how do we be more aggressive champion for that cause and really help them get some of the support that they need, especially if those programs' funds are drying up?
Yeah. Also, we need to focus on the issue of reentry problems that young black males face after being incarcerated, because they are being incarcerated at greater rates than other minorities and their white counterparts. In terms of, Kevin, your experience with men coming out of prison, what are some of the greatest challenges they face? I know unemployment is a big issue.
Jobs is the big thing for young black males. And again, back to the church, Dr. William Howard, pastor of Bethany Baptist Church in Newark, New Jersey, what he did, his church created a prison ministry. This is, again, why, you know, what the doctor just said is so important. The church is the cornerstone of so many of our communities. He went out into the community, him and some of his members, and they created a partnership with various businesses. With the language was, if we prepare these young men to be job ready, will you hire them? And the answer was yes with several of the businesses. That's something really practical. That's something the Nation of Islam did many years ago. That's why Malcolm X, when he got out of jail after 7 years, was able to get a job in a furniture store. There was a relationship that was set up so that these young men were not just thrown back into the communities. And we know what happens there. They end up back in prison.
Mm-hmm. They keep going in a cycle. And also the issue of depression, dealing with those serious issues. That's something that Dr. Perot could probably speak about. And that's a very serious issue for young black males, suicide and depression.
Let me speak on another issue first, because it's very important here. When they did studies nationally, and they looked at blacks, well, not blacks, they looked at prison populations, period. And they found that nationally, 51% of those incarcerated had untreated and undiagnosed ADHD and learning disorders.
Wow.
In some studies, it was as high as 71%.
Wow.
And I just say all that to say, on the front end, if we could stop these young men, and I find it in my practice all the time, from checking out of the educational system, we have a chance. And so our approach should be two-pronged. Yeah, we have to put programs in place to help them once they get out.
Yeah.
But if we don't do something to stop them from going in the first place, third and fourth grade, I'll see kids where they say, hey, I'm not fitting in here, and they literally make the decision, this isn't working for me. And it's a painful thing to watch.
Yeah.
And I feel fortunate that I've seen some of them turn around and go the other direction. But how do you get the resources you need so that they don't check out of the educational system? It's a lot easier and a much more cost-effective way to go.
That's right.
Well, that's one of the things I was talking about earlier, is that parents need to know you have the right to ask your schools to evaluate your children for special education needs and learning disabilities, but also to evaluate them for gifted programs and create what they call an IEP, which is an individual education plan. And as Dr. Perot mentioned, he had a young woman case where she was really into music, and they used music to help get her more engaged and involved in her schooling. The same thing can happen for your child. That is your right to go to the public school, if they're in the public school system, and say, I need my child evaluated. They have a certain time frame. They have to do the testing. They have a certain time frame. They have to write the education plan. This is your right as a parent, and I urge you to take that. If you notice your child checking out, you know, take the school to task. They have to do that for you. They have to provide those resources. Kevin, did you have a comment?
No, go right ahead, Doctor. I'm sorry.
Doctor, go ahead.
Yes, along those lines, you know, we really have to look at intelligence and what it is. In our society, our educational system was designed after the British during the Industrial Revolution, where people were looking to get jobs in a factory. I don't want creative thinkers in. I want people that can regurgitate facts and do what they're told.
Right.
And so our educational system isn't for creative people. People with ADHD and learning disabilities frequently just learn different. I mean, you'll talk to a lot of them. I've not had a dumb person walk through the door in all the years I've been in practice. They're gifted in some unique areas. If your kid, when you're listening out there, isn't doing well, go to multipleintelligence.com, and they have a test there. And it will tell you how your kid learns, and it will explain it. Now, if you find that your kid learns differently and they're not doing well and you know they're smart, figure out how to plug in how they learn. Do they need something different? I find a lot of kids with ADHD are very entrepreneurial. In fact, they're 300% more likely to get their own business. So I'll put them in business projects and have them take on some business interests of theirs. Like I had a kid who was riding a motorcycle, and his motorcycle got totaled. And he was devastated. He went to the salvage yard to get it, and he noticed all these motorcycles. And so he said, well, what are you selling these for? So he found that he could buy the parts and put them back together. He opened an incredible bicycle shop. He had a $6,000 bike that they were going to tell him was worth $300. He just bought a lot of them up, and he started putting a bicycle shop. He's someone that could have easily have checked out an educational system. Now he has a very lucrative business, and the chances of him going to prison are pretty minimal right now.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. And
We only have a couple minutes left. Go ahead, Kevin. We have about 2 minutes left. Go ahead.
No, the doctor made a great point. It was incredible. I agree.
I want to mention Jordan Coleman. He's a young man who was also highlighted in Black Enterprise, and he recently made a film. It's called Say It Loud, where he documented about the importance of education for African-American boys. He is also only 13 years old. Again,
wow.
I want to repeat, this is a young Black male. He just created a documentary. He has a website. It's called www.sayitloudfilm.com. He actually is an actor on Nickelodeon, and he created this film because he wanted to share with other African-American boys the importance of education, and he interviewed a lot of men, Reverend Al Sharpton, Mayor Cory Booker, sports figures, and he just wanted to talk to them about, you know, their experiences, but he also wanted to highlight, I'm a young Black male, and I want to share with you that education is important, and it's okay, you know, I think that's one issue. We only have a couple minutes, but the issue of acting white, I know that some people have experienced that here. I don't know if Jordan or Adam or Kevin experienced that. You know, it's okay to be smart. It's okay to be intelligent. This is what's going to help you in your life. You know, Kevin, I just want to end with you. Do you have any comments about this issue of acting white and trying to really get your education and digging in, and then your peers are saying, what's wrong with you?
Well, I think, one, the roots of it come from of integration in the civil rights movement. There was this perception that some Black folks were leaving the Black community, and as a result, they were not being Black anymore; they were being white, and it's kind of take on this urban this phenomenon of its own all over the country. And what I say to Black folks, you know, we are simply trying to be our African selves in all of our great diversity. I don't care if you were growing up in a two-family household, middle-class suburbs, or inner-city community. What we do need to act is intelligent, as the doctors say. We do need to be able to speak many languages. You know, be able to speak to folks on a street corner as well as someone who's in a boardroom. I think we have to be as diverse as possible. That's true intelligence. And I think that you know, we do ourselves a great disservice when we are ignorant to the historical traditions of education coming out of slavery, where our folks, you know, built many of those HBCUs so that we can get an opportunity to learn. And this is something that's unacceptable. And I'm hoping that with the examples of Michelle and Barack Obama in the White House, that folks understand that there is something to education, that it is something that we need in order to empower ourselves.
That's wonderful. We only have about 1 minute left. We have a call here. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. I came in late and was hoping you could provide the contact information. There isn't time for me to explain my background and my interest in this subject and my expertise. A board member of Dale Carnegie said he'd been trying for 20 years to figure out how to make people flat out smarter, and realized after reading something of mine that he never would, and I had. I've been at my wit's end up to Nina Reese when she was in charge of No Child Left Behind, explaining this pretty simple process that clinical research has proven enables people to learn better. But be that as it may, I would like to be able to follow up with Kevin Powell and the other guest who was speaking, Doctor. I didn't get
Dr.
his name.
Perot.
Perot.
I'm gonna. I will put their information on my website. We have about 30. Thank you for
what
calling.
What is your website?
I'm going to put it out now. My website
okay.
right now is what you're calling blogtalkradio.com/joykeys, JOYKEYS.
Okey-doke.
I want to thank, we have 10 seconds left. I want to thank Kevin Powell. I want to thank Jordan. I want to thank Adam and Jonathan. Dr. Perot, thank you so much for listening and participating in this important conversation. We can continue this forever. Thank you, and I will talk to everyone soon. Have a wonderful day.
And you'll
thank
be
you
back next
me.
Week, right? Same time, same place?
Same time, same place.
Adios.
Thank
you, Ms. Keys.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Dr. Perot. Thank you, Adam and Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you.